Good morning. Welcome to the Health and Nutrition Program. Dr. Fred Harvey joins us by telephone every other Monday at 10 o'clock, and Fred is on the phone with us right now. Hey, Fred, how are you?
Hey, good morning. Doing great.
So,
how's your week?
My week has been good. How about yours?
So far, so good. Nice weekend, beautiful weather.
Well,
got outside of it.
Yep, that's good. It was a beautiful weekend. A little cloudy, but I was hoping for the rain, but the rain really didn't come much in my neighborhood, unfortunately. So Fred, you sent me a bunch of emails, and I don't know if I could do justice to wrapping up
dozens
of emails you sent me suggesting topics for today's show. So where would you like to start?
And I just wanted to start first with saying that I have so much gratitude for being a part of this community. Actually, I have so much gratitude for WMNF and for your work over the last 41 years. Without you, I wouldn't be here. Without you, all these people wouldn't be getting this wonderful educational and music radio. And I just want to say thanks for everybody who's joining the show and listening.
Well, that's a nice way to start, I'm so glad that you do the program every other Monday. It's great to have you do a health show for us. That's really terrific. So.
Yeah, and I really enjoy it, and I really think that there needs to be truth out there because there's so much disinformation.
That's for sure.
So, I sent you so many things about the pandemic because we're in the thick of it. We are in the deepest, and it's getting worse. I wanted to start with just that. America is in denial. Unfortunately, half of our population has been propagandized, and they do not believe that we have a real thing here. For all kinds of different propaganda. I don't even want to go into it because the theories and statements are so bizarre that it's just not really worth summarizing the craziness. The bottom line is, if you just open your eyes and look around, we're heading for a super wave. And unfortunately, many people are ignoring the recommendations and they're traveling for the holiday because they're so upset that they've been trapped for all these months because the Trump virus caused by the Trump administration, because this is really our pandemic. There's no other nation on the planet suffering like we are because other people actually don't have as bad leadership as we do here. And so the excess deaths that are accruing every day are due to Trump and the Republican leadership. I want everybody to actually know that because they are telling everyone to ignore this because of one major thing. And I'm going to just back up here and give an allegory first before we go back to that. I think a lot of people in this country are familiar with a book that's been around for a couple thousand years, and a lot of people look to it for their guidance and their information. The second book in that large book is called Exodus. And I seem to remember a story in Exodus where a man named Moses climbed a mountain, and he got some instructions from a deity. And when he came down from that mountain, he found some people in the valley. His brother and the Jewish people that he had left in this valley in Canaan were doing something that was quite unsavory. Do you know what that was?
No.
They were worshiping an idol of a golden bull. And I want to take that from that era when Moses broke the commandments on top of the golden bull idol and move it to America in the 21st century. The symbol of a good stock market is a golden bull. Merrill Lynch's logo is a golden bull. We are sacrificing humans here in America at the foot of the altar of El, the Canaan god of the bull. The stock market is the god, and we are sacrificing humans to keep the stock market alive. This is the first time in human history that we've developed medical interventions to treat the stock market. And it's not going to work. I think there's a lot of people who believe in the author of that book, and they ought to really pay attention here because they're supporting what Moses was really angry about.
Hmm. So you don't think the vaccines are going to work? Is that what you're saying?
There's several issues I have with vaccines. I've talked about them before. First, there's only one and possibly a second actual vaccine because vaccine, the overall concept is that we are immunizing, but most vaccines that we are familiar with are protein derivatives of viruses. There's a couple of other ones out there. The measles, for instance, is one. The polio, they're live attenuated viruses. So they take the measles, the polio, and they kind of debilitate it, kneecap it in the lab, so to speak. So it can't really cause the disease that it used to, but it causes a light infection, which causes the immunity. Those have 50 years of track record safety for the most part. These things are novel. There's only one vaccine coming from a company called Novavax that is actually a purified protein COVID-19 spike protein derivative. The rest are a very bizarre new thing. It's called transinfection. And it's not using the same technology that the ground up or weak measles or polio virus is doing. This is actually taking a non-human virus, a monkey cold virus, and they take it to the lab and they alter its genetics to include coronavirus SARS-CoV-2 spike protein genetics. And that's called mRNA, messenger RNA. mRNA is the template for creating protein. So we have a blueprint for creating COVID-19 spike protein in that mRNA inside a monkey virus. So all the people that have taken this shot so far have actually had a monkey virus infection injected into them. And then the monkey virus adenovirus injects the COVID, coronavirus SARS-CoV-2 RNA, into our cells and uses our cellular machinery to make the spike protein, which is what causes the immunity. It's actually what causes it's the spike protein that connects to the bradykinin receptor that triggers the cytokine storm, which is the cause of COVID-19 autoimmune disease. And so my concerns are severalfold. One, the COVID spike protein actually induces the autoimmunity. It's likely it does it in weak, sick people that have large viral cases, loads, so they have lots of that spike protein. So a little shot of spike protein in the arm from the Novavax vaccine is probably not going to result in long-term consequences. However, we have no idea, none whatsoever, what 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the line is going to mean for having our cells with COVID spike protein incorporated into their matrices. Not just a little bit in your arm, but throughout the cells in your body. This has never been tried before. This is a massive human experimentation with the United States being the principal experiment source. We don't know what the outcome of this experiment will be.
Well, how long, if there are ill effects from adding this RNA to our bodies, how long do you think it will take for that to become clear?
I would say between 1 and 3 years. And all of the data, there's a really good Wellcome Institute from Burroughs Wellcome, which became Glaxo. They have a really nice graphic. I have to find it and get it to you. But it's just basically a timeline for vaccine production. It takes 10 years in the real world to produce a vaccine. They start with multiple possible cases and over 5 years distill it down to, say, 10 possible vaccines. And then they study those for 2 more years and come down with 2 to 3 that they're going to really put into the full clinical trials because those are really expensive. So normally, the final vaccine product has a 2 to 3 year efficacy and safety testing period. We have 2 months.
Isn't this RNA vaccine, isn't this essentially what they use to combat Ebola?
It is not quite the same thing because this type of transinfection insertion of the RNA, from all the research I've done, has not specifically been used before. The Ebola thing is similar, but I can't tell you exactly what they're doing there, but this is novel. So we don't really have a track record on how this plays out in human bodies.
All right. So, you know, Fred, I disagree. I mean, I think if Dr. Fauci says it's good, I'm gonna go with him.
I totally agree. He's an expert in this. But the thing is, if you listen to him originally back in the spring, he said it takes 2 to 3 years to develop a vaccine. But I think he's capitulated because of the fact that the administration is not doing anything. He's trying to give people hope somewhere. But the problem is that hope is dashed as of this week when published in Health Affairs, Dr. David Paltiel, Jason L. Schwartz, Amy Zhang, Rochelle Walensky, November 19, 2020, Free Access, Health Affairs, the title, Clinical Outcomes of a COVID-19 Vaccine, Implementation Over Efficacy. So these people are brilliant, and they've done some major number crunching, and what they did was go into looking at how we can get the vaccine to people, even if it is safe. And what they figured out, looking at many different scenarios, is that it's not likely that they're going to be able to successfully get over 50% to be immunized in a time frame that would actually help to blunt the pandemic. So all this smoke and mirrors about depending on a vaccine has been smoke and mirrors trying to get the president elected, because this is not the way to go.
Well, now the election, but the election's over. So Fauci, you know, if he was trying to help the president get elected, he's no longer in that role.
I don't think
role.
He was trying to help the president get elected. I think he was trying to help people have hope, because he
have
saw
hope,
a completely
But Fred, what are you going to do? I mean, let's say that the vaccine comes around and is available next June and July, one of the vaccines. What are you going to do? Are you going to maintain social distance? If you're not going to take the vaccine, are you going to maintain social distance, wear a mask, and not go out to restaurants? Tell me what you're going to do if you're not going to take the vaccine and it's July of next year.
Okay, so the first thing we need to do is actually look at how can we stop the pandemic before I get to June. There's only one way. It works, and we need to implement it today, because we're going to see the Thanksgiving holiday probably double, quadruple, or even go in a exponential tenfold increase in cases by the second week in December. That's what many experts are predicting. I sent you some graphs that I did that predict what's afterwards. If it's a small surge, we're looking at maybe something like by the time that Trump loses or leaves office, we're looking at maybe 1,800,000, 1 million cases a week. If we have the worst case scenario where we actually have Thanksgiving and Christmas do it, by the time he leaves office, we're looking at somewhere between 2 million and 20 million a week. But we could have herd immunity with everybody infected by the end of March, because we're never going to have enough vaccines available to get everybody out there. Plus, we have so much anti-vax pushback. The only way to stop it is with public health initiatives. They work, and they must be done. And another group of Mayo doctors, and I think I sent you that article last week when I read it, basically said we need a 4-week lockdown with a $5,000 stimulus. And then when we come out of lockdown, we need aggressive testing, contact tracing, mandatory quarantining, and we can stop this problem, because they did it in Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, New Zealand. It's possible, and we can do it. But that's the only way, because these people at Health Affairs say the vaccination is only part of an entire program, and the program includes what I just said. So we might as well just implement the actual program now, and the Senate should be called back by a good president emergently to cause a stimulus and shut us down for the month of December so we can stop this.
All right, so
have a December holiday month.
Let me just go through those. You want a 4-week shutdown. You want, and I think this makes sense, you want people paid who aren't able to work during the shutdown.
Give them $5,000 for everyone is staying home, like in China. Not by mandatory, because we care about each other and love each other, and the government's going to pay us $5,000 to stay home for a month.
And what else, and this all comes under the rubric of the public health initiative that you talked about a moment ago. So what else do you prescribe?
We have to do, when we get out of the 4 weeks, we have to do it cautiously. We have to do it in stages. We have to watch the caseloads coming up. And then we have to do aggressive testing. And we have to do aggressive contact tracing.
What does aggressive testing mean?
That means that we need to step it up, because right now there's only one testing facility, the state testing facility for Manatee in Sarasota County. They're reducing access to testing. I mean, we can go and pay for it, but not a lot of people have the money to go and pay $200 a test to get it done. And you can drive through your CVS and get it done, but people aren't being told to do that. And we don't have a public health system that is actually doing follow-up. We need to do like they do for HIV and syphilis. The public health department calls all the contacts when you get an STD. So why aren't we doing it for this? So we need that, because it's the only way we're going to stop this.
All right. So once you do aggressive testing and you find out that somebody does have COVID-19, then what do you do with that person?
Well, that person needs to be isolated for 2 weeks. And all of that person's contacts need to be tested, and if they test positive, isolated. And they need to isolate anyway because they've been in contact, so they need mandatory quarantine.
And do you enforce that, or is this voluntary?
Yes. Well, I would love to see that people open their hearts enough to understand that voluntary is the best way, but I think that we need to actually have the government enforcing it, not like China did with an iron fist, because we don't live in an authoritarian country, but, you know, we should be able to have cops remind people not to be stupid. I don't think they need to have any kind of major penalties, but, you know, if an officer of the law is saying it's time to put your mask on and go home, I mean, I think we should even consider having ankle bracelets for people that are tested if they're unwilling to cooperate. Do we need to stop this? And every country that's done rational public health efforts have shut it down. Think about it. Japan has 125 million people, and they have 1,000 cases a day. We have three times that many people, but we have 250,000 cases a day. This is just insane. We don't need to be killing Americans.
Well, you're listening to Dr. Fred Harvey on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And usually by this time, we've taken a few phone calls from listeners and taken some email questions. As you can tell, Dr. Harvey, Fred, I think it's fair to say you're pretty fired up about this.
I am absolutely on fire. I really want to see us be healthy, and it hurts me. I cry every night thinking about how many people are dying. My heart is breaking to see that propaganda has worked to kill America.
And where, when you say propaganda has worked to kill America, which propaganda are you talking about?
The propaganda that says that you don't need a mask, that it's a hoax. This is mind control. It's not infectious. It comes from 5G. Blah, 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 blah. Just look at the science. Just open your eyes and look around and see the countries that actually treated it like the infectious virus that it is don't have it. The ones that played games with it, Bolsonaro in Brazil, Putin, that idiot, he's killing Russians, Eastern Europe, and all the alt-right idiots there that deny everything true. On the planet, they're killing Europe because they're staging maskless protests in the streets. They've been totally deluded by this propaganda wave that, unfortunately, has been so effective.
All right. Well, Fred, we're almost halfway through the program. You want to take some phone calls?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So, Gail is in Dade.
I've ranted long enough.
Gail is in Dade City. And she says, our friend Eve told us that we should take omega-3 fish oil that has been IFOS or European Union certified. I'm hearing a lot about krill oil. Please speak to the superiority of one over the other. Is fish oil better, or is krill oil better, or should we be taking both? And Gail says, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Gail, and great question. Omega-3s are really important. They're so vital for our brains, our hearts, our livers, our vascular system. fish oil and algae-based vegan omega-3s are very important. And they, when you get products like that, they're really concentrated omega-3. Krill oil, on the other hand, has some omega-3 because it does come from seafood, but it's mostly some triglycerides, and in a better product, it has something called astaxanthin, A-S-T-A-Z-A-N, or is it X-A-N-T-H-I-N? It's a carotenoid, like beta-carotene, an orange pigment, which gives the krill oil its dark orange color. That's a really highly effective antioxidant. That's why you would take krill oil, I think, mainly, is that astaxanthin is really a very good thing. On the other hand, you need to take the fish oil, around 2,000 milligrams of that a day, of the actual omega-3 component. Remember that when you look at the bottle label, it may say 1,000 milligrams of fish oil, but if you look at the back, it may say only 600 milligrams of omega-3. So that's what you want to see, the omega-3 adding up to about 2,000 or 3,000 milligrams a day. If you do krill oil, there's only about 100 milligrams of omega-3s in there. You have to take a lot of it. But one of those packs a punch, and the astaxanthin in the krill hangs around the body, so you only need to take that a couple times a week. But fish oil daily.
Okay. Now, Karen writes this. We've already answered this. What is your assessment of the safety of the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines?
I don't know yet. I'm willing to watch. I have an open mind, but I want 3 years of safety data because this is a completely novel experiment.
And Bobby also wants to know about vaccines. Bobby says, will the RNA vaccine work on a person with common variable immune deficiency?
That's a really good question, and I have actually no answer for you. I would call the immunologist that takes care of your immune deficiency because that, I don't know. It may or may not produce antibodies that you want. And I'm not sure that in that situation I would, with an immune problem already, I don't know that I would want to take something like the mRNA vaccine. I would rather wait for the protein derivative vaccine that's also coming.
Well,
by the way, about vaccines, I am a supporter of rational vaccination, not willy-nilly vaccination. But if you have a lot of illness, if you have risk, you know, the flu vaccine saves so many lives. Fragile lives every year. The elderly, the infants, the people with heart, lung, kidney, diabetes diseases, those people are saved by the flu shot. And from all the research that I've been able to acquire, and, you know, obviously sometimes things are obfuscated, but, you know, looking at it for years, it seems there's about 0.1%, one in a thousand people that may have a significant adverse event. You know, they'll get a lot of pain, they'll have fever, they'll feel sick, but it's only one in a million that actually has a serious adverse event requiring hospitalization or death. So it's really a very safe intervention, considering 165 million people in America got it last year. There were maybe 165 deaths. I hate to say that there were deaths from an intervention, but it saved 60,000 lives.
Our next call comes from Lynn in Pasco County. Lynn, thanks for calling into the program. What's your question for Dr. Fred Harvey?
Good morning, gentlemen. Okay, this is my main concern. I just heard today. How are you supposed to inject something that is below freezing into your body? I don't understand that.
Right, but no, it won't be that. The below freezing is because there are live viruses in that mix. And viruses, because they don't have any cellular water like a bacteria, they survive freezing. And so once they're iced, they are transported because you don't want them to grow in transport.
Right.
They can be actually in the refrigerator, from what I've actually heard in a talk. I think it was on PBS NewsHour. Actually, one of the manufacturers said the way it works is it's delivered on ice. It's stored on ice, but to get ready for the people coming in, it must be put in a fridge, and it can be there for 10 hours, and it can it could be a fridge, I think he said, for 3 days, and it can be at room temperature getting ready to inject for 12 hours.
Okay. So I didn't hear that part.
It's just the storage part.
Okay, thank all right, you so Lynn. Much. Have a good one.
You too.
You too.
Well, this is WMNF in Tampa. Mark writes from Brandon. He says, Dr. Harvey, we recently had a smart meter installed on our small home without our knowledge or permission. My wife and I spend a lot of time outside tending to the grounds, and we enjoy the fresh air. Would you recommend that we have the electric company replace the smart meter with the original meter, writes Mark in Brandon.
That's a really interesting question, and I have really tried to look for information that backs up anything about whether smart meters are good or bad for humans or for the environment. Overall, my gestalt is it's another microwave transmitter. We don't really need to layer any more on. It's really low level, but if you recall, the way it works is that the power falls by a square of the radius. So the distance away have the efficacy of the power. Every time you double the distance, it goes down by four. So as you walk away from it, it's really not that bad. It's low power. But, yes, every energetic, chemical, and otherwise burden that we put on our body makes us less resilient or resistant to illness. So the smart meters do help manage the power grid better, and we live in a state that's really besieged by surges and power problems. So I don't know what the right answer is. I'd like to be able to say, yes, I do. You might want to look online for one of those microwave blocking devices, a little coil of copper wire or things like that. Some people say certain stones have effects. I haven't seen scientific data on that, but it's not going to hurt you. And if it deflects some of the extra radiation, it may help.
Well, if you got a question for Dr. Harvey about health and nutrition, you can call us at 813-239-9663. And this is 88.5 FM. Let's go to Peter, who's in Seminole. Hi, Peter. You're on the program. What's your question?
Hey, I have a question that I haven't really heard asked. It's about smoking and COVID. Now, COVID, of course, is a respiratory disease or whatever virus. When people, you know, inhale the smoke and blow it out or vape or whatever it is that affecting people all around them?
Yes. Have you heard of secondhand smoke?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so it's the same kind of situation. And what we found out recently is as we watched more and more of the pandemic play out, initially the thought was that it was primarily, you know, 6-foot particulate, you know, big spittle drops that were actually causing the problem. But they found out, like the flu, the coronavirus actually can stay in suspension in your atmospheric soup inside your room for long periods of time. So, yes, exhaling smoke from a vape or a cigarette is probably going to spread the virus. However, I would bet that the nicotine does a good job of killing some of those viruses. But on the other hand, you make yourself more susceptible to getting serious COVID problems because you smoke, causing lung disease.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Peter. Thanks a lot. Andrew's in Hardy County, and he writes this. Thank you, Dr. Fred. The allegory is brilliant. And the remark, this is the first time in human history that we've derived a medical intervention to treat the stock market is perfect and searing irony. We must not fail to listen to his cautions on autoimmune response. The mRNA vaccine is not all there is in the pipeline. There are multiple methodologies being used to derive vaccines. Every year, there are autoimmune deaths just from cancer therapies. Caution is good, writes Andrew.
Yes, Andrew, brilliant. Thank you for your good feedback there. You're on it.
Let's go to Joel in Clearwater. Hi, Joel. You're on with Dr. Fred Harvey. What's your question?
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. My question is, presuming we have a very good effective vaccine with really negligible side effects, and it's available, if somebody takes it and it takes whatever, a month to get in place to provide the immunity for that person who's vaccinated, if you had a whole room of people that were vaccinated and they had come to full efficacy of being protected, if they're going out into the real world and coming back to the room that you're in and you spend 6 hours talking about stuff and you're not vaccinated, do you have a carrier situation?
That is one of the best questions that shows the holes in the vaccine program. One of the things that they address in the Health Affairs article is people getting the sense of complacency because they've been vaccinated. Vaccines do not cure the virus. Vaccines do not completely prevent the virus. If you get a flu vaccine, and I've seen this happen numerous times, you can still get the flu. It's an attenuated flu. Instead of having your body racked with pain and high fever, you have a sniffle and a cough, and it lasts 1 week instead of three. But so people who get the COVID-19 vaccine will be probably not going to get the full brunt of the infection, but they will get it in their respiratory mucosa, and they will be able to shed it on other people asymptomatically. Therefore, the public health initiative is the only way we can control the vaccine, and it must be started yesterday.
So just to make sure I
control the virus, that is.
Yes, I don't know if you can hear me right this second.
Yes.
To make sure I understand it and the listening audience. So again, 100 people have this. They wait a month, and they're all fully protected as best they are going to be protected by it. They go out in the world. They come back into a room. You're in a conference, a meeting for 6 hours with them. It's not your typical Florida box with just cold air recirculated around. And you're saying that we all can get us non-vaccinated people can be definitely affected by these totally perfectly protected people, correct?
Well, they're not perfectly protected.
Well,
in fact,
that might be my error.
Only like maybe 80, 90, 95%, it's hard to tell exactly, those are the early data, how many people are actually going to be protected from it. And I'm not sure how many vulnerable, et cetera, they got into the studies to show that those people actually get coverage too, because they may not, if somebody has lots of disease, they may not develop immunity. So we don't know how effective it's going to be overall, but it definitely is going to create, and it's brought up numerous times, and we know that it happens with the flu, it still creates carriers.
And I just thought of a really important question. Is there going to be enough money to actually evaluate the effectiveness? I mean, all the money's being sort of front and loaded to the R&D part and the testing with the FDA, but how about post-mortem? The post-mortem is, it's on the market. Everybody can get it, just like going to Walmart and get it. Whatever.
That's what the Health Affairs article actually addresses, and I think that what we've seen is that the current administration is a federalist. So basically, he said, "My hands are washed of this. I have no responsibility. The states are in charge. See you later, guys. I was God. I created vaccines for you. Now you deal with it." Well, the states have been devastated by the pandemic. They have no extra resources. Florida's at a $5.2 billion shortfall. Where are they going to get the public health money to build the infrastructure that doesn't exist yet to distribute the vaccine that doesn't exist yet? Can we say smoke and mirrors?
Yeah, definitely smoke and mirrors.
To keep the population at bay while the pandemic rages. From my perspective, we don't have a system. The Health Affairs article tells us there is no national distribution system because Trump's a federalist. The states are on their own. They have no money. It's not going to get distributed effectively. That's going to hamper the actual effectiveness of a vaccination program, because unless we get to 50% in a month, we're going to see this thing just roll through America.
Well, we better be used to this pandemic and protocols, because it doesn't look like it's really going to go away.
Unless we get leadership that says it's time for a mask mandate yesterday, and if we start doing the right thing, public health, if we can get the Senate to come back into session and give us $5,000 and shut us down, we would be there. But they're unwilling to do what's necessary to save Americans, because they see herd immunity as the answer to save American stock market.
Okay. Well, Joel, thanks a lot. Joel, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thanks, Joel.
You're listening to the Health and Nutrition Program on 88.5 FM. Ron of West Tampa writes, what is your view of zinc picolinate for overall nutritional health and specifically for men's health? And what is the recommended daily dose of zinc supplements, writes Ron?
So zinc is actually helpful in many different enzymatic processes in the body. It's great for everybody's health. The reason it's mentioned in men's health is it may have some efficacy in the testosterone system and testicle responsiveness. That said, it also is very helpful in building the immune system so it's stronger to fight viruses. I take personally in my multivitamin about, I think it has about 6 or 8 milligrams of zinc glycinate, and I take another capsule of 20 milligrams of zinc glycinate a day. I don't exceed 50 milligrams in most people. It's not necessary. If I go as high as 50 milligrams, I will usually give another milligram or two of copper to keep the copper to zinc ratio in balance, which is important. But I think, it's a very valuable mineral, and I don't think everybody gets enough of it or of magnesium.
Let's go back to the phones. And by the way, if you want to call in with a question, our phone number is 813-239-9663. David's in Clearwater. David, thanks for calling into the program. What's on your mind?
This blood test that I'm looking at and my visit with my doctor this morning, Dr. Fred. I'm going to be 76 next week, and this blood test came back with a glucose level of 116, which is flagged as high, yes. Which my doctor said, well, you have diabetes. First of all, is that, I assume that's correct. What can I do to, what do you think I should do to bring it down?
So diabetes is a spectrum illness. Spectrum meaning that it goes from a pre-state to a fully developed state. Usually over time and with different circumstances. When I was trained, a glucose over 125 on two separate occasions was considered a diagnosis of diabetes. It's been ratcheted down, but your 116 would be considered in the pre-diabetes zone, I believe, unless you've looked at a secondary number called hemoglobin A1C. And hemoglobin A1C is a long-term check of the sugar averages, and a number of 5.7% there is the cutoff for normal glucose metabolism. Over that, we consider it to be pre-diabetes, and over 6.4% is considered full-blown diabetes. You're on the path. You have the illness per se. So the first thing I would do is look at my carbohydrate consumption, because carbohydrates are what your metabolism does not tolerate. It doesn't metabolize them well.
Right.
So there's two ways of doing that. One, you could go on a low-carbohydrate diet, like a ketogenic diet would really get it iced very quickly, but you don't probably need to go that bad. But I would cut out all added sugar, bread, pasta, potatoes, rice, and just eat vegetables and lean meat and low glycemic fruits like bananas and pears and apples. And that's a good way. There's another thing. There's a doctor named Jason Fung, F-A-N-G, who produced several studies on diabetes a couple of years ago that showed that intermittent fasting is highly effective at reversing diabetes. And that diet is either eating 3 days or skipping 3 days a week of food, not completely, but what you do is you eat a full day, three meals, and after dinner that night, you don't eat until the next dinner. You get a full 24 hours of fasting 3 days a week, highly effective at changing your sugar metabolism. Another thing you can do is you can restrict your food intake for hours. So you could eat 8 or 10 hours a day. So eat between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. or something like that. And that will result in sugar control. And then there's also two clinical studies that show that if you actually exercise, specifically walking 30 minutes a day, you actually reverse type 2 diabetes.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
You're so welcome.
David, thanks a lot. And good luck with your diagnosis. Thank you. And let's go to Gary in Clearwater. Gary, you're on. What's your question?
My question is, first, I have a mask that says I believe in science. Secondly, It is absolutely disgusting when you hear on TV all the time, all the doctors and all the scientists telling people to stay at home, especially during this Thanksgiving. And then the news, I saw the Air Force filled with people. I'm thinking, why don't they close down the airports so people can travel?
That's a great idea.
But my question was for you was, the last couple of times I talked to you, we talked about milk, but I never asked you what is the best milk to drink.
Oh, that's a good question. Well, if you're going to drink milk, and many people don't at this point, it depends. Do you want to know which cow's milk to drink or which type of milk beverage?
I would say what kind of cow's milk, yes.
Okay. Well, though there's a risk of doing it, of infection, which is why they have to pasteurize milk, raw milk is actually the best way to get milk because it's the way we got it from our mother's breast. Cooking the milk to kill off a couple of bacteria that might be there kind of ruins the proteins in the milk and makes them allergenic to it. So though it's illegal, that is probably the best milk to drink. But so otherwise, I would do pasture-raised, grass-fed, organic milk.
Okay.
Okay, Gary. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Welcome,
great to hear from you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Here's an anonymous email. It says, I'd like to ask you about the treatment for the cure for Hep C. What are your thoughts? And is there a specific cure for Hep C that you would recommend? And what are your thoughts on milk thistle?
Milk thistle is a wonderful herb that helps with supporting liver metabolism. When you combine milk thistle with N-acetylcysteine and alpha-lipoic acid, an amino acid and an antioxidant, you actually produce more glutathione in your liver and raises serum blood levels of glutathione, which is the best antioxidant detox molecule that your body makes. So milk thistle is wonderful. Treating hepatitis C, though, it has evolved over the past decades that I've been in practice. There were some really very difficult to tolerate treatments in the past using a substance called interferon and an antiviral medicine called ribavirin. But now there are two new therapies. I remember only the name of one called Harvoni. And Harvoni is a single course treatment that has some amazing results. I can't recall exactly, but I think what I read is something in the 90% remission rate. It's not a cure per se, though people will treat it as a cure. What it does is put the virus down so far that it doesn't seem that it can bounce back, and it may be gone. And most people don't seem to have a recurrence. But yes, Harvoni, and there's another one that's a single course remedy, and it works in so many people. It's highly effective.
Let's take another phone call. We're going to go to Dan in St. Petersburg. Dan, you're on the health program with Dr. Fred Harvey.
Hello. Hey, I was cruising around yesterday out to the sandcastle thing in Treasure Island, you know, and the real popular band was playing at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There's probably 5,000-10,000 people there. There's probably that way Friday and Saturday. Just a couple cops had masks on. And I went for a swim and a walk. I came back, the band was over, and I heard they closed it down because there are too many people close together. Now, before that, I went to a Sunday market, you know, in St. Pete Beach. And people are everywhere. No one's wearing masks. So what is the prospects of this herd mentality taking over if people are still going to go out and get fresh air but be around everybody with no masks?
Dan, we really have a significant problem here. There's so much disinformation. Our American libertarian, freedom, narcissistic, me first attitude is preventing a lot of people from actually understanding that this is actually, COVID is not just an infection. COVID is a challenge for humanity to step up and work together. It's the first challenge we're going to get in the Aquarian age for group activities, cooperating through compassion. This is a challenge. This is how society must change to survive into the next century. We will not survive if we don't cooperate. Fighting, building walls, and ignoring truth is going to kill more people. And we need to work together. It's really unfortunate. There are so many people that are so righteously defending their right to be infected and to infect. I hope that there's some miraculous occurrence, like Christ enters everyone's hearts for Christmas and wakes them up, and they all realize suddenly that it's better to share than to be selfish.
So Fred, would it be fair to say that if you're breathing in other people's air that they exhale, that you're in danger? Yes. If you're close Absolutely. Enough to breathe in other people's air, you're in danger.
Yeah, that's why those idiotic, maskless Eastern European and German rallies are causing super spreader things. That's why Trump rallies are super spreader events. This is a terrible thing. People breathing into each other's faces and just taking home the virus.
All right, Dan, there you go.
Every day I just see it. Is there a certain type of blood type that's more applicable to get it?
There's some early literature that suggested that maybe type A was a little less resilient or maybe a little bit more susceptible to the COVID, but I don't know if that's really panned out. I haven't seen it written again.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Dan.
Yep.
All right. Well, this is the Health and Nutrition Program, and our next question comes from Rob in Antioch. He says, I had asthma attacks as a child, and I still get asthmatic around cats. I've never used an inhaler, but I wonder if this puts me in a high-risk category for COVID, writes Rob.
That's an interesting question, and I've not seen specifically data on asthma, but somebody with chronic lung disease where it's been damaged, like with COPD, chronic severe asthma does cause COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease changes in the lungs. So it could, but if you just have a little bit of a wheeze when you get around a cat, it's probably not an issue. But one thing you might do if you're around cats rather frequently is to take some stinging nettle extract, stinging nettle leaf extract. It's a really effective tool at stepping down allergic response.
Okay, let's go to Antonio, who's in Tampa. Antonio, thanks for calling into the program. What's your question for Dr. Harvey?
My question, I was talking to a Trump supporter, and they mentioned that I failed to realize that Trump is the hope of the world and that masks are the cause of the COVID. And I'm trying to understand, how could you come to such a conclusion to believe that the mask is the cause of the COVID? Where do you get that?
You live in dark corners of the internet inhabited by the people that swarm 8chan, 4chan, QAnon, and weird YouTube video worlds that talk about satanic pedophiles and other bizarre non-entities. That's the only way, man. It's propaganda. They bought the propaganda because it triggers something in them.
It's just wow, man. The mass.
That's how propaganda works. Propaganda works by finding an emotional trigger in people and drilling down to it. Somebody sent me a propaganda video yesterday from somewhat rational sounding woman who was very distraught about the information that she was about to give to us. And she started off with a classic propaganda technique by telling us that we will feel nausea and all kinds of horrible emotions when she gives us this information because of how horrible this information is. And then she went on to use another classic propaganda technique before even discussing it, denigrating it by making a name up about it. Instead of being the pandemic, it became the scam-demic. And so you know that when somebody starts off with that kind of idiocy, if you haven't been triggered by the words, if she hasn't got your emotions and you're above that, you can see that it's propaganda and you can just walk away. Because you know, if it starts with that kind of emotional suck you in, then you know that it's going to be a lie. And here's the other thing. Spend some time in your heart, listen to it, and just say, is this true? Is this really true? And realize, no, it's not. And then you know you can walk away.
Antonio, thanks a lot. Thank you.
No problem.
All right.
Thanks, Antonio.
Frank writes this. Frank says that he's a retired public health engineer. He says, thank you, Dr. Harvey, for talking about what we need to do to stop the spread of COVID-19. I would add social support for those who need to quarantine beyond financial support. We still lack testing even for medical personnel. My cousin is a radiologist technician with almost 40 years experience at a mid-sized local hospital that has a designated COVID floor. She is never tested. She is one of several medical personnel I am close to that are either rarely tested for COVID or never tested. And Fred goes on to write, the population of Taiwan is just over 23 million people. The population of Florida is just over 21 million. Guess which one has almost no COVID-19 and can function as a normal society? We lack not the technology, but the ethics, the values, and the mindset, writes Frank.
That is so true, Frank. And we know that we have an ignorant leader for our state and an ignorant legislature that works with the ignorant leader of this state because he's a clone of the evil menace in Washington. But you're right on with the first thing you said, social support. Another article I read this week, and numerous, actually, I'm really feeling the pain for seniors, especially those trapped in warehouses. Those who are stuck in the senior warehouses and are not allowed contact with family are basically being tortured by the narcissist. It's not the government. It's not the nursing home. It's the narcissist because it's their narcissism of not wearing masks and ignoring the problems is why we can't see our loved ones. But we still need to support them. So find ways of contacting them, whether it's if they can do a Facebook or FaceTime or some other kind of video, just so you can see them. It's so painful, and I feel so badly for our society. I wish people could just open their hearts.
Let's go to our next caller. Anna is in Sarasota. Anna, thanks. What's your question for Fred?
Yes, Dr. Harvey. I had a Shingrix shot last month, and I had a reaction from it. My arm was very sore. And I had white flu-like symptoms for several days. I took Tylenol and a Zyrtec-type product. So do you think I should get the second shot, or do I have enough antibodies built up from the first shot?
So the question is, did you have a really bad chicken pox when you were a kid, or did you have a recent shingles event?
I don't remember when I was a kid, and except for my mother said that she put gloves on me, so when I scratched, I wouldn't hurt myself more. And no nothing recent with shingles.
Okay, so that just tells us you have a really strong immune system, and from what I understand, the nature of the Shingrix vaccine is that you really do need the second one to make sure that you get antibodies. However, you could ask your doctor to run an antibody test and see if you've made them. I'm just not sure how long it will last without the second vaccine. That first one, yeah, that's kind of understandable that you would have that kind of a reaction. But I would ask the doctor that's administering it and your personal doctor about any other immune issues you might have that would prevent you from getting a second one. All right?
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. We've got, this may be too complicated. We only have 30 seconds, but Larry writes, I passed out for less than a minute, according to my wife, while sitting on the sofa. 2 days later, I felt the same. I went to the emergency room. EKG, stress test, heart sonogram, MRI, all normal. Blood work good. Heart rate dropped to 40 beats per minute. Diagnosis, out of balance electrolytes, possible adrenaline surge. Do you have any thoughts? And Fred, can you wrap it up in 15 seconds?
Really quick. When your heart rate drops like that, that's autonomic dysfunction, that's sick sinus syndrome, you need a tilt table test, you need to find out why your nervous system is not responding appropriately because your heart rate should be normal. You may need a pacemaker if the heart rate stays that low. So get another cardiology evaluation.
Well, Fred, thanks a lot. Thanks for another informative show, and happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Happy Thanksgiving to all.
Okay, Fred, thanks a lot. And you've been listening to Dr. Fred Harvey on the Health and Nutrition Program here on WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Fred is here every other Monday at 10 o'clock. Next week in this time slot, you'll hear the Sustainable Living Program. Now, here's the latest news from NPR.